Mr. Cauldron, Reel 10, you'd just joined the 16th Battalion. You'd gone to the RHQ between Piraeus and Athens. What was the setup when you got there? How did you fit in? How did they fit you in?
Well, at that particular time, they were all looking a bit rough because the fighting had just finished. And I didn't realise then, till the traveling and route to Athens, the things that they had to deal with. Because the main thing was, they didn't know where the enemy was. It was like fighting in Ireland is today. They didn't know where the enemy was. In daytime, they'd be drinking with in a bar. And at night time, they'd fight among them. That's how things were. One section of the Greeks fighting against the other, and we were in between. The infantrymen were in between, trying to keep things quiet. And they got some rough things that stick sometimes. In fact, I think there's quite a few of ours, 40 or so, taken prisoner. And they were taken up into the mountains, somewhere in Salonika, that way somewhere. And anyway, they were just beginning to get settled in and getting rested. They look weary. That was my first impression. They all look weary. And I think they just got over the shock of having nothing to do with being able to relax. And that's, and from then on, they started relaxing.
Now, what job were you given at?
I had to go to the office as usual, to the adjutant, need to call the details, hand me over to the office sergeant, and he had to hand me over to RSM. And they'd already got this vacancy for me as a MP fitter. And as it happened, there was a lorry there, and it was a part workshop lorry. So I got the lorry back again. But no RSM motorbike. The motorbike had been left with 58. But anyway, I had my lorry again as a workshop lorry.
And how was the motor transport section organised at 16th Battalion?
Well,
how many fitters were there and who was in charge?
There were no other fitters, only myself at RHQ. The fitters were all in the companies. There was a fitter in each company. And a vehicle fitter, no gun fitters, vehicle fitters. And there's at least one in each company, as far as I know. And I had an occasion to meet them when we were on not exercises, on social activities. Because I had no occasion to go out with the companies at all then.
So what was your job?
My job was just keeping the vehicles in shape again.
What vehicles did the headquarters company have?
Well, we still had one or two Bedfords, we still had a couple of Jeeps, and we had one track vehicle. And eventually, I think we lost that before the Athens.
What sort of track?
What we call half track. Like a tank. Like a tank on wheels, but like a tank tracks, but a vehicle on wheels. Not as big as.
A brain carrier?
Brain carrier type. And they were the picking officers up the line.
And what we talked about the Bedfords. What were the Jeeps like to maintain?
Well, the Jeeps were okay. I mean, they were straightforward. They were so easy to access. They reminded me of the Triumphers that we had later on in England, later on in life. You could get round them, you'd get spanners to them. The only thing is that they were all metric size spanners. Get a new set up with everything, but it was easy to access.
were they reliable then?
Reliable, oh yeah. Reliable.
What sort of problems were you mainly dealing with the vehicles?
Well, punctures was one of the main things, and in general, day to day wear and keeping them clean.
So a lot of it would be
oil changes with no major jobs, because they were all reasonably in good condition by then. They'd been changed once or twice in the Durham's life, I think.
So it was routine maintenance mainly.
Routine maintenance chiefly, not oil maintenance at all, because they more or less, I think, picked up new ones. We got to Greece, followed into Greece, I think.
Did you have a system of the way you maintained your vehicles? I mean, was there things you had to do certain days, or did you just do it as you liked?
No, there were certain things I've got to check. I've got to check oil and water on most of them, especially those when they were stood by for different drivers, and then they checked them themselves when they took over. The biggest one, the ones that got the most from the Barton Abbott was the Batman's cars, the CEO's car, and the Doctor's car, things like that, because he went in rough places. But the CEO's car was out a lot more than the other. I only used to see it now and again, but when it came in, I got to get through it as quick as I could. I see if it's anything major. If it's anything major, he wouldn't let me do it, because it would take too long, so he always arranged it to have a one spot with RDs or RDSC and get a spot, rather than do anything major.
Right, so, well, you were there, how long were you there for in this the headquarters in Athens? They moved quite soon, didn't they?
Well, not soon, no.
Okay.
We joined in January, early January, and we did both for the vehicle.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Okay.
Well, the main thing was activities, was social activities, because they'd had a rough time in Italy, they had a rough time in Athens, so I think the CEO, he relaxed all duties, and more or less told the commanders to take as much leisure time as possible while the chance. And we did just that.
So what sort?
Went out into Athens quite regularly, went up to the Parthenon and to the Acropolis, saw them. Nobody missed seeing going round. You could see them, but no one missed going round them. In Athens itself, Athens was similar to Algiers, a really nice part and a real rough part. And the nice part, then, 90% English spoke. 90% English spoke. The cinema there was an Odeon cinema. It was named Odeon, and it had been built, just finished built when the war broke out. So it was a reasonably new cinema. And multi-place. The thing is, any of the scenes in England, and it was almost across the road from the palace. Not many young guys from the palace. That's when the guards were wearing the pom-poms on their feet. But anyway, that was the main thing. 90% English spoken, wherever we went. There was an YMCA there. We used to use that regular, because there was some smashing ladies who lived there. They lived there before the war, been there for a lot of years. And they knew how to run it, they knew how to entertain everybody.
What facilities would you get the YMCA then? What did it? What work did it provide for you?
You could get a meal there, a light meal there, and they were cheap. You could get tea, coffee any time. There was no overnight staying there. That was encouraging people to get some of that leave. Logic. So that was out of bounds, so overnight staying was out of bounds. Like it would be normally overnight staying at YMCA, as you can understand. But there was entertainment. There was always tea dances and dances in the evening for people that to go in the evening. But we were never out in the evening. We were all out during the day. And
what were these tea dances like?
Oh, I mean, because you've got the, apart from the English girls that lived in Athens, you've got RAF, ATS, always a sprinkling of naval girls, and ATS and RAF. There's always a sprinkling come with the troops, wherever we went. And in fact, I've got one or two photographs with the modern dancers. So I was dancing that was my occupation then, of therapy and entertainment and dancing, even going back to the time in England.
You mentioned,
I used to go dancing a lot with my wife, my girlfriend, then my wife just turned up. And there were football matches planned.
Did you play football?
I never played football, but I did. I played netball. I never played football. So I wasn't good at football. Well, I never played any sport to mean anything. I played netball, so we were taught at the garrison camp way back in Oxford Street. And I did cross country. We had a cross country half marathon. It was about 8 miles, and fantastic day that day. We set off about a mile away from the camp, to keep the crowd away from the start. And we went down to a point, on down a straight road, then we came back cross country, down tank traps, up, down tank traps, you know, gullies, plough fields, everything. But what we didn't know until we got back, this, I didn't know until we got back, the signal section had put lights up right from the start, right way down the circuit. And Mike thought it was, you know, sat on poles, and it's got blinking microphone on all poles all the way around, and speakers in circle, finishing circle. So they're broadcasting all what was going up to all the others that were waiting for us finishing. They were fantastic after, and I listened to one or two after I finished. But anyway, I think it was about 80 starting, and there were so many from each company, so many from RHQ. Well, as I said, there were about 60, between 60 and 80 running at the time, and I'd not done anything as ecstatic as this before. I'd done short races, but never done a long one. I thought, well, I'll stick it out. But anyway, I finished up 26th at St. Foy RHQ, so that weren't bad. And one thing it did for me, it put me in line with all the rest of our RHQs. They didn't know who I was till that happened. A lot of them didn't know who I was till that happened. They knew I had been with them all that time, all a long time, and it put me that they all got to know who I was, so it helped me a lot there. Anyway,
Was it actually part of us, because they had a big sports day the 16th in Greece, do you remember that, or that was that part?
That was one of them, that was a sports day. Now, after that, I played netball. That was another part of the sports heritage job. And I was really finished after that day. I'd worked hard that day as after that. And then another time, we had a football match. We must have played against another battalion. Another part of the division must have played. And also, we played in Athens Stadium against Greeks in their stadium. We played against the Greeks in their stadium in Athens, and with one time that I found out that Greeks played rough football and dirty football, because they kicked our lads to pieces, but they won. Our lads won, but they kicked to pieces the Greeks, but they enjoyed it. Everybody enjoyed it. I mean, there's numerous football matches, intercompany football matches, into battalions against the other Yorkshireites and the others that was with us at the time. But anyway, really, I think the Durhams really got rested, and it didn't make them good. Well, it come to time then to leave. Get near end of April, and we're sailing back to Toronto. I forget the name of the boat. But we were all on one boat this time. And where we got to Toronto, and that's when the NT section left the rest of the troops, because I don't know what vehicles the rest of the troops used, but we just got our own vehicles, and about 10 vehicles we moved off away from Toronto and set up the east coast of Italy. And kept the coast road all the way up. I forget how many days it took us. But anyway, I remember one particular village we went through. There was a cycle race going on. I mean, it seemed funny. This is a war going on, and in this seaside place. So we all stopped the this obviously we could all pull into the side and made our brief stop for lunch. As usual, biscuits and tea. And watch these cyclists going up a little down roads, that promenade and things like that. And it seems so strange as they're walking on, they're in their cycle race, because they enjoy the cycle, the road races in Italy, back in France, the Mockingbird races. Anyway.
Who was your officer at that time?
Oh, I forget his name now. I forget it. I knew the officer of the 58th, I don't remember the officer of the Durhams at all.
Okay. So you're moving up the coast road?
We moved up the coast road, and the destination eventually was a place called Fawley. And we arrived at Fawley about the 1st of anything like that. Because it was in Poland, by the time we'd located a field or somebody located this field for us, got us lorries in, got the cookhouse going and everything, we heard that the war was almost finished in Italy.
How did you feel?
And then the next morning, we got word that it had finished. The Italians had backed up, that was the 2nd of May.
How did you feel about that?
Well, we felt up on the lead, because we was going in the line then. The drills were going in the line for the last push. That was the instructions, right from leaving Toronto. We've got to get up to there and mobilise the rest of the battalion, and they're going in the line for the last push because the war isn't getting very close to finishing. So it happens. We didn't have to do it, because they did it for us, the Italians backed up. Well, for the next 2 or 3 days, it was celebrations.
What do you remember of the celebrations?
Well, there were also fireworks. We got fireworks from everybody. And the civilians joined in. The civilians joined in. All the leaders around about, there was fireworks, there was bonfires lit. And everybody was drinking all day.
Do you remember the decorated jeeps competition?
No, I don't remember that at all. I don't remember that at all. As I say, there was our little section at RHQ, away from battalions, away from the rest of the companies. And the rest of the companies, we've got hundreds of people in each pot. And they've always got more brains going for getting things done at RHQ. Because at RHQ, we all had our own individual jobs to do for other people. I mean, some of the office staff, they were doing for the rest of the regiments. And anyway, but one thing I do remember about all this celebration, the fireworks, and they weren't our fireworks, they must have been civilians' fireworks. It was only fireworks we got with their lights, and some of them here then went up, some of that. But there was plenty of wine drunk. But one thing I remember chiefly about Fawley, and that village that was in just outside Fawley, was the nightingales. Now, I don't know whether the nightingales were glad because war was over, or whether it was just we happened to be there, went to there. Their time for singing or mating, whatever it is, when the singing comes up. Not just one, dozens of nightingales singing away at night through mail after midnight. Marvellous singing. I mean, I remember this nightingales from the wireless when I was younger. The BBC were hours and hours with a man up in a tree at night waiting for a nightingale to sing. And when they did sing, it was broadcast on the radio. And there were weeks and weeks looking at that. Probably your parents would tell you the same. They probably remember it. But I remember it. And then I was there in the middle of it, and dozens of it, glorious. But anyway, from then on, after the celebrations had died down a bit, I got a job to do. And I took all the masks of the headlights. All the masks, all the headlamps, all masked up, if you probably remember. All masked up with the slits in for lights. I'd take all those off, and I was sent out to the companies to help them to take theirs off as well, and came back to my own little patch. And I was warned that we should be getting some information to move. That was our little section, not about the companies, but our little section. About 20 vehicles altogether. We should be getting instructions to move and probably to minute's notice. So we were filled up with petrol and everything, all set up, ready for word go. And the word came on the night of the 7th of May, and we got it about 10 o'clock. We were moving across it, moving up at 2 o'clock in the morning. Get your feet up for 10 minutes, and we're moving off at 2 o'clock in the morning. And we moved off on 2 o'clock on May the 8th. Now that's the day to remember. And I wrote in my little story of mine previously.
Tell us on tape then.
That was the E-Day. And we set off from the little place at Fawley at 2 o'clock that morning. Lights ablaze, dazzling us rather than shining where to go. Because I mean, we never travelled with lights before like this. Well, we hadn't, not for the last 6.5 years. And we went through the Alps, and what a sensation going through the Alps with all these lights. The didn't know where we were going. We've got to follow the road in front. The first who was leading, I don't know who was leading us at that particular time. It wasn't me on the motorbike, that would then be in the 58. And we just went through the Alps, and all we could hear was the sound of waterfalls and engines. That's all we could see. Engines and the sound of waterfalls. And we made one brief stop. It could be about half past 3 or 4 o'clock time. We stopped somewhere because I think we were in trouble. So we had stopped for half an hour. And it was then that we got instructions. We got to get to the instructions were to get to Yugoslav border as quick as possible. But anyway, that wasn't that instruction really wasn't for people behind us. Where we were going wasn't there. We went, finished up at a place called Volksmarkt, I think it was called. I used to call it Volksmarket, but anyway, it's funny, it's Volksmarkt. A place not far from Klagenfurt. And we reported to an RASC depot, which had been rushed up in front of us. And to get this, to find out where to put the supplies and provisions, and then we were put in the field quite near there, bedded up in our own bodies, and wait for orders from there.
So you were into Austria here?
We're into Austria now, yes. And that was my entry into Austria. And for a few weeks, I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks, us 20 lorries were attached to RASC, which was a, when you come to think about it, it was a good thing, because the RASC had got the biggest job was getting the provisions off with their lorries to a depot. So they got to get to Italy, all these provisions, into Austria as quick as possible, so they couldn't rely on any provisions in the place we were going to figure our own up. And then troops were powering us up behind us, which we didn't know about, different ones who got into Austria, different routes. And then we had to take provisions out to these camps that were being set up all over Austria. And the RASC had no vehicles to spare for that. So they were using our vehicles, because we were up there, you see, doing nothing at the time, because we weren't in the line, you see. So they used our vehicles, the RASC used our vehicles to get provisions out to the camps that were being built up all day after day in Austria.
Were you driving or were you just...
I was driving on my own lorry. And it was empty. It was empty in the camp. Well, left as much space as ever possible for provisions. And we used to go out to with map references to go to and different routes, best run, best whatever road they could give us. We had to report to this main depot where these big lorries were bringing all stuff up. And there was a sergeant of people. He came us off what to put on and where to take it. And many times it was quite a long to find it was get back. But we did find them eventually, because I mean, every company had the different road signs, and we knew the signs, we had to follow the signs. I mean, there were some politics did. We were politics did then. The Oak Tree went. The Oak Tree sign went somewhere. But anyway, we was at this village, Volksmarkt, sleeping out in our lorries. And delivering goods and whatnot for about 2 or 3 weeks. So eventually we joined, they'd got there, the RSC had got their vehicles on the way, and we moved up to somewhere else. I forget the name of that particular place where the battalion RHQ was, and then we went there. I don't know how many weeks, but while we were there, all we were doing was rounding up horses.
Tell me about that, because there's quite a lot of fuss made about that in the history.
Oh, yes. I mean, we hadn't time to round up the horses. Well, we saw these horses all the time. We delivered these rations to different places. And it wasn't until the personnel got into Austria that there was personnel available to round the prisoners up that were living rough. And the prisoners didn't wait to report to, you see. There's no war at finished. They didn't wait to report to. So our brothers had to collect their men up first and eventually collect all the horses up. And with the help of the prisoners, there were some kind of Cossacks that these horses were killing.
Did you get one? Or did you?
I tried to grab one. And I can't get up. And the only way I can get up this horse, he took his oath. He went in the bog. If he hadn't took in his bog and me to walk, there would still be a riding yet, I think. But anyway, that was my last time I went riding horses. Well, neither might be him anyway, but I wouldn't ride them. But of course, everybody would. Not saying, huh? Some people wouldn't even hear them. Some bad people wouldn't get enough of riding them.
What about the repatriation of the Cossacks and the...
Well, I don't know how they were repatriated, but they were grouped up into camps, as usual, and where they went to, I don't know, but in the MT section, had nothing at all to do with that. But in our spare time, if we ever saw any horses anywhere, those found more than one, we'd round them up and take them back to our camp. And we got fields allocated round about, make sure that the fencing was okay, and we'll put in these fields where they could get grass. Eventually got fodder as well, but they could definitely get grass. And whenever we went with the lorries, if we could do them ourselves, we'd let somebody else know where they were, two or three. So never, very rare they were by themselves. The horse always finds a mate. Anyway, we decided to come back, when we got back, and we were going to go and collect them all up and feed them in this field. So eventually, they were all organised, and for a while, each company had so many horses, and when they got bedded in and got the equipment, because they found the equipment as well, they found saddles and everything in it that's required, we found all those, found out where the dumps were and everything, and each company had their own field and their own number of horses, till eventually we were having battalion races. Well, before we were having races, because I mean, some lads could ride, but most of the officers could ride. Some lads could ride as well, you see. So we'd find a field, as big a field as we could, that was straight, no matter how many furlongs it were along. And we used to have a stop at this end, stop so far from edge at the other end, and have a little races on their own. And officers would win all this, you know. Then eventually, later on, we left that area and went to Bowden. Now all the horses had been collected all up, one thing and all been collected under proper care. We taken away from the battalions, taken the companies, and all put in a proper area and looked after properly. We went to Bowden, and that's RHQ were at Bowden, the companies were round about. But only RHQ at this village called Bowden, this town called Bowden. And we got there. July we were there. And at Gratz, there was a racetrack organised.
Gratz is near Wilden, is it?
Gratz is about 10 miles. And in the Gratz area, there was a racecourse built. Well, I think it was one that was partly built in the pre-war. But it was organised, made a proper jump. A tote was built. All this work was done by the German prisoners. The work was done by the German prisoners, which they were glad to do something. And the authorities organised a three-day meeting. But that little meeting is organised before, but this particular one was a three-day meeting, so that all troops in the area could have a chance to go. Because you couldn't all go one day, you couldn't all go, could they? I mean, you couldn't leave the camps empty. So it was arranged a three, and sergeants from all battalions round about, they were volunteered press gang to be used as tote operators, as anything to do with the course and things like that. And with all sergeants, all of the ranks, all sergeants, because they thought they'd be able to do such things better. And the race meeting was organised 3 days later.